All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome to the R&D Wrestling Podcast. For those that are watching the video form, hi, hello, happy to see you guys. And for those that are listening, oh, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. This is a first for both myself and DJ. My name is Ryan, by the way. This is DJ, hence the R&D Wrestling Podcast.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of cut you off there.
Yeah, make sure I'm introduced, you know, DJ.
Yeah, guys, no, hi. Take the spotlight. Say hi to everybody.
Hi. I'm the co-host here. We're co-hosting this show together.
This is the first time ever that either of us are doing a podcast, so we're very excited to be starting on this adventure today. For those who don't know, I'm actually a YouTuber. I have a YouTube channel called Sector for Nerds, and it's a place where I talk about a lot of Star Wars content. I've currently got over 1,300 subscribers, which is absolutely incredible. I hope to continue to grow that adventure. And for those who are big Star Wars fans, I highly recommend you subscribe to that channel. But another thing about me, you guys, I'm not just a giant Star Wars fan. I'm also a massive fan of professional wrestling. And over the last 5 years, there is one company in particular that I have been a massive fan of. And if it wasn't for that company, I don't think I would still be a wrestling fan today. And that's AEW. And I know you share the same passion as I do about it, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big AEW fan, but just for our background here, I may not have a YouTube channel like Ryan does, but I'm a big fan of pro wrestling. I'm a fan of pro wrestling because of him and his brother, Christopher. And I've been a fan of AEW since it started in 2019, I think. 2019,
yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2019. But as a pro wrestling fan, I've been a fan since, man, I think it's been a long time. Like, man, when was the man? You guys introduced me for like, I think I was in sixth grade when you introduced me to this. I think.
Okay.
I think that was when I saw the first pay per view with you guys. I'll get into that later for my story, but
yeah,
man, you two made me a fan for like, sheesh, my whole childhood practically.
That's what wrestling will do to you, man. Like once you start watching it, it's like this thing that just once you take it, you keep on going with it, and it just kind of always sticks with you. And I know mm-hmm. that to be true more than anybody.
In a way, that's kind of like what helped us bond a bit, like just sharing our.
I would say so. Yeah, for sure. I can agree with that.
Like
I think,
I'll say, I'm a baseball and football fan because I play those two sports, but
right.
one sport that I can like sit and watch, you know, and like be relaxed with, pro wrestling is one of them because
yeah,
I love everything about it, which we'll get into later, but. That's kind of like my like pro wrestling. It's fun.
Sure. Yeah. So for those who are maybe wondering like, all right, what is this podcast going to be on? I feel like we've kind of already set the layers for it. This is going to be a podcast mainly about All Elite Wrestling. Now we will touch on some WWE stuff here and there. But I think AEW is sort of the thing that I'm really into at the moment. And it's not something that you see a lot of these days. Cause I feel like, the perception right now, especially in 2024, is that WWE is such this hot product and it's like every little thing that AEW does, it gets held under a microscope and is constantly criticized.
Well, to be honest, though, like, yes, they're doing good in their own thing, but there's so many good things about AEW that people aren't bringing up, especially in the national media. Like for national media, you know, you can hear them talk this about WWE this, WWE that.
Because WWE is a global brand, AEW is not. Right. Yeah.
But AEW is growing slowly, you know, like they can't get to the level WWE's at. No one can because, you know, that's the reality.
They're a company that's only 5 years old, you know.
But they're doing so much that, you know, not other companies couldn't do in the indies because they have a good leader in Tony Khan. But as long as they stay patient and keep building with the roster they have, they are going to, I think they can do more than WWE, honestly, in my humble opinion, because like they have,
I think they can too.
They have the men's roster. They have the tag team division. We're going to get into this, you know, like we're going to take some time and get into this here, but like, I will always say this, AEW has always had the best tag team division since 2019. In my opinion, it's just a matter of booking to me because like, you know, you see these good matches, but like, where's the storyline? Because that's what people pay attention to the most.
But see, and I think that's where you and I can disagree a little bit too. And well, we can definitely get into that, but I don't think that necessarily every match needs to have a story. And I feel like so many people get caught up in that. We can get more into that later though. I do want to go over though, like the things that we're going to talk about regarding this podcast. So sure. We're going to talk about like the history of AEW. That's basically going to be DJ and I kind of mapped out like our first dozen episodes basically, and what we want to do with it. So kind of our goal is going to be two things. One, to kind of talk about like, you know, the history of AEW, because they haven't been around that long. They've only been around for 5 years, but at the same time, 5 years is still a long time. And it's a lot of time that a lot of stuff has happened. So we definitely want to go back and discuss a lot of those things and talk about the moments that are significant to us and, you know, maybe critique certain things, you know, and like what AEW could be doing better, what they could be, you know, just sticking with their guns with, all these different things. And another thing that I want to do is I actually have two YouTube channels. There's Sector for Nerds. And the other one is top 10 character moments. Now, top 10 character moments, I kind of stopped doing just because I kind of wanted to just put most of my focus into my main channel. But I used to do all the videos were just like these lists of like top 10, you know, favorite moments of a certain character, you know, that I'm into, whether it be from like Star Wars or other movies and shows. But I wanted to kind of incorporate that into this podcast because everyone loves a good ranking list, right? So every time that we do an episode, we're going to talk about like, you know, top 10. For example, today we're going to talk about our top 10 favorite AEW male wrestlers so far, right? Because, you know, over the past 5 years. And then next time we might do like the top 10 women. Eventually we might get into like, you know, the 10 best matches or the 10 best pay-per-views that they've put on. All these different things, you guys. And I'm very excited for it. I hope you guys are as well. But I think today, instead of us necessarily going through the history of AEW, and we're going to obviously again go through certain things, but one of the things that I wanted to do today was just kind of give you guys the chance to get to know us a little bit and sort of why we're wrestling fans, why we like AEW. Go on, DJ.
How it started for us too, like, you know, because it's not like, you know, we put on the TV and we're like, oh, here's pro wrestling. You know, each of us has like a story of like how we got into pro wrestling, how we each are passionate about it in our own way.
Absolutely. Okay, so then here's the big question for you, my guy. Do you want to start first or should I?
You know what? You've been doing this longer. You've been a wrestling fan longer than I am, so okay. I'll let you start out.
Okay. All right, sounds good. So my wrestling story starts back in 2011. I remember they were doing an event in Green Bay. Now, I didn't go to this per se, but I remember, I think it was like my grandfather that was talking about it. And somewhere along the way, like, he's like, oh, you guys should check out this wrestling show. And so I'm like, okay, why not? Let's do it. Like, we watched it on TV. And the moment that I started watching it, I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And like, I don't remember everything that happened. Here are the things I do remember. I remember the core for any 2011 fans. Who remembers the core? I remember they were beating somebody up and then like Big Show came out to make the save. And I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. Like they're beating up on this one guy, but another guy's coming out to try and help him out. But then eventually he got beat up too. But then the other big thing that I remember from that night was Edge defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Dolph Ziggler. And then Vicky Guerrero was the special guest referee. And I'm like, well, wait a second. This doesn't make any sense. Like, how is this person who's like, I assume is with this other person, how was she able to be the referee and do all this cheating and stuff? And then eventually Clay Matthews walked out like of the Green Bay Packers. And like around the time I was like a pretty decent, you know, size sports fan. I feel like over the years I've kind of gotten out of sports a little bit, but Clay Matthews, I knew who that was. And I'm like, oh, what? He came in a referee shirt. That's pretty cool. And then he helps Edge win the world title or retain the world title. I also thought, you know, Edge had like such a cool entrance as well with all the pyro. So yeah, there was definitely that element to it. And ever since that night, wrestling has always kind of stuck with me. Now, over the years, as I start to get a little bit older, get into high school and everything like that, you know, I'm still into wrestling. Around the time of, what would it have been? Like, obviously, I was there through, like, the rise of Daniel Bryan, and obviously, that was never meant to be, and even regardless of what WWE tries to tell you. But I was there through that period of time. I was there, you know, the big dog, Roman Reigns. There's obviously a lot of feelings that people have towards all that. But I think it was around the time of like 2016, I believe, like around 2016, 2017, I started. Well, okay, so 2012. All right, now I feel like I'm bouncing around all over the place. But 2012, I was also introduced to TNA and I would watch that for a little bit. I then got out of that and was kind of solely back with WWE again. And then around the time of the Black and Gold era of NXT, like not when it first started, but like around the time that like Sami Zayn was there, Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, I really got into that. Like that was cool to me. And it was then getting to the point where I'm like, wait a minute, why is this like, you know, quote unquote developmental stuff better than the main roster? What's going on here? And I feel like as time kind of went on, I can't necessarily pinpoint to a certain point, but it was just over time, I just kept falling out of love with wrestling. And it no longer felt like I was tuning in through my enjoyment of it. It felt like I was doing it because, oh, this is what I do every Monday night. This is what I do every Friday night. And there were just a lot of, you know, decisions that were made, questions that I had, like the wrestling matches I was no longer into. And I started watching other stuff, right? Like some of the NXT matches, I would, you know, kind of branch out a little bit and I'd kind of learn about what Ring of Honor was, what New Japan was. And, you know, I started hearing about Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks and that whole thing taking off. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool stuff. Like, I mean, I could get into like this kind of wrestling, but I don't know. I'm just kind of, WWE just isn't doing it for me anymore. I'm not into it as much. So around 2019, right? Like you had the rise of Becky Lynch, you had Kofi Kingston's run, both of which I thought were terrible builds. But the results I absolutely enjoyed. Like Kofi winning at WrestleMania was something I wanted to see. Becky winning was something I wanted to see. But that was like the last gasp for me of things that I wanted to see from WWE. Otherwise, I was like tuned out. I was so disappointed with like all these NXT guys coming up and not doing anything on the main roster and them being completely different characters from what they were. And I'm like, man, I'm done with this stuff. And I remember thinking like, man, maybe this stuff just isn't for me anymore. And, you know, I would watch BTE because, again, like that was the stuff that I found cool, right? Like the Bullet Club, Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega. I was like, all right, let's see what these guys are doing, right? And then eventually I start hearing stuff, you know, through the, you know, the dirt sheets, the reports or whatever, like, oh, these guys are going to make their own wrestling company. And they did this show called All In, and we're going to talk about that show on the next episode of this podcast. That show basically was like, oh no, wait, I actually do still like professional wrestling. It's not professional wrestling that I don't like, it's WWE. And then I find out that these guys are going to be making their own company called AEW. And I'm like, oh, okay, let me see this. And from that first press conference that they did, everything that they were saying, everything that they were promoting, like wins and losses mattering, bringing in guys that you're not normally used to seeing, building young guys like Hangman Page, for Hangman Page to walk out on that press conference and say, I'm going to be the first AEW world champion. Chris Jericho didn't do that. Kenny Omega didn't do that. Cody Rhodes didn't do that. All of their big stars never did that. But one of the youngest guys on their roster at the time in Hangman Page was like, no, I want to be the first world champion. And that like resonated with me. I'm like, yeah, I want to see the young guys go after the world title and prove that they deserve to be in that spot. I didn't have the chance to watch Double or Nothing live, unfortunately, but those first couple like free pay-per-views that they did and watching All Out and seeing clips from Double or Nothing, I was like, I want to watch this every week. I want to see a television show of this every single week on my TV screen. This is the stuff that I want. The great wrestling and like the emotion from Cody and his promos and that one that he cut where he's like, I've gone from being undesirable to goddamn deniable. Like, I love that stuff, man. And even like Jericho at the start, and we can definitely get into like Jericho stuff later on, but Jericho in the start was so crucial to AEW and how, you know, his run as world champion was. So there was just all these stuff going on, the tag team division, all these different things that I loved. It wasn't these overcomplicated stories or stories where people are throwing dog food at one another. Like, it wasn't anything like that. It was like, no, we're focusing on professional wrestling, the wrestling side of it, which is what I enjoyed the most. So, yeah, I think after that long, like, ramble there, I think that's it for me, man.
Nice. Nice story for sure. And for me, so I wasn't a fan of pro wrestling at first growing up because my main sports have been always baseball and football, and they still are to me as of today when I'm in college and all that. But I remember when I hung out with you and your brother one night. I think this was a Saturday night when they were still doing pay-per-views for WWE.
Okay.
I was hanging out with you guys this one time, and this is at your dad's place, I remember, where we were playing pool, and then Chris was coming to you, and he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And they're like, we're going to go watch a pay-per-view, DJ. You can come join us if you want. I'm like, okay. Obviously, I'm going to listen, you know, what my hosts are doing, so I'm going to do that. So we're in your movie room, and I'm like, I'm seeing this for the first time, and I'm like, this is actually interesting. Like, it's actually good. Like, you know, seeing all the fights and the moves, like, I will never forget the match that made me enjoy pro wrestling a bit. It was, I think, Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar, and I didn't know much about WWE at the time, but
that
I will
great
say...
Great Balls of Fire, wasn't it?
It was, that yep. show.
Okay.
Great yeah. Balls of Fire, yep.
Okay.
That I saw Great Balls of Fire, and I won't forget because...
The logo quite literally had a sack in it, for those who don't know. Continue, sorry.
Yeah, anyways, it's all good. So I see Great Balls of Fire with you guys, and I'm seeing all these matches. I can't remember them on the top of my head, but the Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar match was the one that stood out to me the most. And so when I'm seeing this, and I'm like, this is actually interesting, and like it's actually appeasing to me, you know, like all these fights, the Coquina Clutch by Brock Lesnar. Well, Samoa Joe, my bad. No, and then when Brock Lesnar does his like F5, whatever, I'm like, whoa. And Paul Heyman being his manager, you know, like practically getting a heart attack introducing Brock. I'm like, wow, this is fun. It's like, you know, you get these promos, but then you get some fighting too. And I'm like, okay, I might have to go into this a bit more. So then after that pay-per-view is done, I'm like asking you guys, like, what else is there for me to watch? Because this seems pretty cool to me. You and Chris were like, oh yeah, there's Monday Night Raw, there's SmackDown, there's NXT. And Mike, my eyes were open like a little kid on Christmas Day, because I'm like, what? There's so much good wrestling. Like, what? Wow. Like, you know, I'm like a little kid on Christmas practically.
Sure.
So when I'm watching Raw, and I'm like, okay, it's not bad. But, you know, the more I watch it, it's like, they're doing the same things over and over again. Like, I will not forget. We watched a Royal Rumble one time. I forget what year it was. It was Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar. We were doing predictions, like what we would do.
Right.
And I'm like saying like how, oh, they should make Finn Balor champion because they, you know, I like Finn Balor, you know, because they hype you up for this type of crowd and all that. And when I saw like Brock Lesnar is still the champ, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. He's been champ for so long. And I'm like,
yeah, and he's like never around to fight.
Yeah, like seriously, what's going on
here? Oh, but it's an attraction, guys. You're being an idiot. It's
like no. Like I'm watching these matches over and over again when I'm getting into pro wrestling, and I'm like, do they ever change it up? Because you know, like they have this person, they have this person. I see all these NXT
company
guys
could never make new stars. They like, never could.
Like seriously, how hard is it to make a new star? Like I'm not trying to go on a rant.
It's
here,
not hard. No, it's not hard. I get it though. Yeah.
Like I remember when we do this consistently, when I get together with you two, we're like watching all this and we're like, when are they going to push this person? When are they going to push this person? And one of my bright moments of watching pro wrestling with you guys was, I think it was 2019 Money in the Bank. And this was the women's one, not the men's one.
Yeah.
I think that was one that Bayley won. And I remember you and I were so happy because we've been rooting for Bayley all our pro wrestling lives.
Love like, Bayley. Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to say this on air right now. Bayley's always one of my favorite women's wrestlers. Like, yes, she's in WWE, but she's one of my favorites all time.
And
like,
let me, if I can just cut you off real quick to say something as well. For those who just think like, oh, we're just crapping on WWE. When I crap on a wrestling company, whether it's WWE, whether it's AEW, whether it's anything, I never do it. We never do it to see them fail. I don't want WWE to fail. It's actually rather the contrary. I want to see them succeed because pro wrestling has always done better when there is competition with one another. Like during the days of, you know, the WWF and WCW, WWF became such a big thing. Stone Cold Steve Austin became that big thing because they had competition and WCW was kicking their butts in the ratings every single week for like months.
And WWE
needed to do something. Yes. And it forced WWE to get better. When WCW went out of business, WWE became complacent. It became a thing. And again, for new people getting into it, it's like, oh, this is cool and everything. But eventually that wears off and you expect to see more. And that's what's happened with both you and me. So whenever we're saying like, oh, WWE has done this wrong, it's like, oh, you guys are just WWE or you guys are just AEW shills. You don't know what you're doing. Like, no. We want to see both companies succeed. We really do.
Like,
it's just, I don't like the current WWE product. I didn't like it when Vince is around. And if I'm being perfectly honest, even with Triple H around, I still don't necessarily like it. It's definitely a little bit better. And, you know, kind of goes without saying, but all right, I'm sorry. Continue. Hey.
It's all good. We need to get this out there. We need to get it out there. Like agreed. I am not a, like, I'm just going to say this. I'm just a pro wrestling fan. I am not a hater.
We are pro wrestling fans. Absolutely.
Like, just because, you know, one company does this or that doesn't mean, you know, I don't hate them. It's just like, you know, I'm taking a break and I'm going to check this out in a way.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, but yeah, anyways,
no, I agree.
Getting a sidetrack here. So back in 2019, when Bayley won it, I won't forget this because you and I were like so excited. We're doing predictions beforehand and we're like, Bayley's going to win this. Bayley's going to win this because, you know, of all the hype from SmackDown, she was doing good. And then like Chris is like, oh no, she ain't going to win. You know, your brother like usual.
Yeah.
And then when Bayley got the briefcase, you and I were so happy because, you know, it's like WWE can actually push a star the fans want for once, because I remember watching early on, like they're not pushing the stars people want, you know. And like, they're not
it's
doing
just
this
like Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. And that's like it.
Like, don't get me wrong. They're good stars. But as a pro wrestling fan, I want to see other people get pushed, you know, because.
Yes, me too.
Like, that's how you grow. You know, you got to push this person or, you know, push that villain.
Swerve Strickland being the current AEW world champion. Like, it's a perfect example of making a new star.
And we will get to that later, but that was exciting because I'm like, maybe they'll change direction. But after that, I'm just watching these pay-per-views over and over, and I'm watching Raw and SmackDown. I'm like, I'm watching the same thing over, you know? Like, I'm watching the same thing over and over again. Like, I've seen it before. It could be Brock versus Roman, whatever. Next thing you know, on Raw, they come up with another promo, and they're like, oh yeah, next pay-per-view, we're fighting again. And I'm like, we just saw this.
Yeah.
Like, as a pro wrestling fan, I did not like it. You know,
seeing
like,
the same things over and over again.
Like, I needed something fresh, you know, like, I was getting tired of it, you know, like.
And you had all these NXT guys that you could have brought up and did something new with, but they just never pushed anyone.
And, you know.
And Finn Balor was the closest that got there, man. But once he got that injury at that first pay-per-view, like, he was done. It was never the same. And to this day, he's still not the same to me. Yes, he's found some success in Judgment Day, and I will give him that. But there was a long stretch, a period of time where just Finn Balor, oh man, it breaks my heart. It really does.
He wasn't the same like he was when he fought for the Universal title when he was, you know, called up. He wasn't the same guy.
I think we'll have to see what happens like after they break up the Judgment Day. Because, like, I mean, I think we're probably getting to that point pretty soon where they're probably going to end up breaking them up. I've seen some of their segments and it's like, okay, maybe that's what they're doing with like all the Liv Morgan stuff. But yeah, I guess we'll have to see.
We'll have to wait till after SummerSlam probably.
Okay. Yeah. Also, I should probably put this out there for context, just in case people are being like, well, this stuff already happened. We're recording this like 2 months before this actually goes out. So by the time that this podcast does go out, there is every chance that like the Judgment Day is no more. And like Rhea Ripley is world champion or something. Yeah. So yeah, just want to put that out there. Just so everybody knows.
So sheesh, we're sidetracking too much, but this is a good
conversation. We're good. We're having good conversation.
We're having a good conversation.
It's good. Yeah, we're good.
So yeah. Anyways, I remember watching WWE and I'm like getting sick and tired of Raw and SmackDown. I'm like contacting your brother and I'm like, this is sucking. Like what? Like seriously, I can't sit down anymore and watch 3 hours of Raw, you know, when there could be better stuff to do.
You don't want to watch Baron Corbin pour dog food all over Roman Reigns every week?
I don't want to watch that. Well, remember that one Raw we went to, the three of us? It was in Milwaukee.
Oh, that was so bad.
When Baron Corbin was general manager.
Oh, my God.
I will not forget that because the three of us were expecting a better show. I remember leaving that and I'm like, did we just watch that show?
Dude, when Seth Rollins came, that show was one of the worst Raws I had ever seen. Because not only was it flooded with Baron Corbin and his like, you know, mid-card vortex, but like, it was like, okay, at least at the very least, we have Seth Rollins doing an open challenge for the Intercontinental Championship. And then freaking Dolph Ziggler's music, like his record drop. And you could visibly hear me and a bunch of people around me go, Because we'd seen that match like 20 times.
We've seen it too many times. Like when they're saying like it was gonna be a guest guy, whatever.
Yeah, it could have been like someone from NXT or 205 or somebody, and it was freaking Dolph Ziggler. And I that was such a bad show. All right, sorry, continue.
Hey, this is a good conversations here, but yeah, I remember leaving that Raw, and I'm like, there has got to be something different. Like, I am, as a pro wrestling fan, I was probably at the lowest that day because, like,
yeah,
I was leaving.
I don't blame you.
And, like, we were all leaving Raw, like, what did we watch?
Because what was that?
Like, we were all, like, so sad because that was not the WWE that I fell in love with, you know? Or what sure. You and Chris did, you know, when you guys started liking this.
Sure.
And like, when we were, it was just so sad. And like, we're like trying to come up with something, but we can't, you know, find a good program, you know? Yeah. So there, I was like, you know, not watching, but you know, I was watching the good stuff, you know, not like all the way through, you know, when I could sit down and be like,
sure,
watch through this program. So then you and your brother start telling me, you know, like, oh, there's this new company called All Elite Wrestling. I'm like, I mean, it could be better than, you know, what I'm watching right now, so I might give it a try. And then when you two invited me to watch one of those pay-per-views, I won't forget it. I see Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks versus Lucha Bros for, you know, what would be a stellar tag team division. I'm like, this is actually good. Like, I'm actually watching pro wrestling, you know. I'm not, you know, seeing the usual, you know, this, that, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
all the sports entertainment nonsense, you know, and yeah.
Like, you know, I'm actually seeing, like, flips.
It can be dives. Good, by the way.
Yeah. Flips, dives, like, that is awesome. And we'll not forget watching Chris Jericho come out versus Hangman Page for the AEW title. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that was the best match. That was a good singles match, but tag team match, like, I watched a lot of tag team wrestling growing up. AEW just really helped me like tag team wrestling again. It helped me like it again because you see the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros. Lucha Bros are a totally different aspect of Lucha wrestling, but they are
that
so
we didn't
awesome.
Have, yeah, that we didn't have a chance to see because the Lucha House Party or whatever in WWE, it was just like, oh, they always like to have fun. Well, who doesn't like to have fun, Michael Cole? Michael Cole was so unbearable for years, by the way. So for everybody that says he's good now, you didn't have to put up with him for all that freaking time. Maybe you didn't have to put up with him for a while. I'm sure a lot of younger fans didn't, and it was unbearable. Continue.
Anyways, when I'm seeing the ladder match with the Lucha Bros and Young Bucks, I'm like, this is pro wrestling here. Like, as a fan, I'm like, what? Where was this? Where was this growing up? Like, seriously. You see all these flips and like people are actually risking their bodies for this. I'm like, you don't see this.
Not saying that WWE doesn't, by the way, but with their style of match is lockups. This was their format for the longest time. Lockups, rest holds, babyface comeback, finish of the match. That was it. Yeah, every match. Much. That's how it got so like repetitive.
But then you see this fresh company of AEW come in and you're like,
rest holds in any of those in like that those matches.
I will say I didn't see any
Lucha Brothers. Not that I remember.
I don't think I saw a hold either, but like I'm seeing like all these flips, dives, and like they're actually doing good. And I'm like,
sure.
If that ain't tag team wrestling, I don't know what was because seriously, the Young Bucks are Young Bucks are one of the best tag teams out there. And after I saw what the Lucha Bros did, I'm like, wow, that was really good, and like they are one of the best tag teams I've ever saw. Like, I don't say that often, but like,
they're great, aren't they? Yeah,
those are two of the best tag teams right there. Like,
Young Bucks for the longest time, I thought were the best tag team in the world, and then 2022 happened, and then there was another tag team where I'm like, okay, wait a second, it actually might be these guys, and we'll get into that in like a little bit.
So yeah. And then when I saw like the better matches and like the better like types of matches they do, like this was stuff you could come up in a video game, you know, like growing up, you could do like Lights Out, but like, and funny enough, it happened with Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega.
Yeah, it did.
Like when you and your brother were showing me this, I'm like, yeah, this is my new company. This is my new company. Like, don't get me wrong. It's hard for me, you know, like when you watch something over and over again, it's hard, but like,
sure.
AEW won my heart at the first pay-per-view. Like, they won my heart there, because like that was pro wrestling at a pro wrestling right there. And I'm not gonna lie, it was just better product to me, because from that moment they're like, oh my gosh, there's so many different guys, and like, you know, there's so many different people that you didn't know because, you know, they never had the platform yet.
Cody Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes had like that match at the first Double or Nothing that I didn't watch live, but I did go back and watch later, and I'm like, man, there was no reason that that match had any right to be as good as it was. And no, then Cody didn't. Breaking down at the end, because they were going to do like a match between him and his brother versus the Young Bucks, and him saying like, I don't need a tag team partner, I don't need a friend, I need my older brother. Like, man, that just
like, seriously,
that hits you.
Those moments you don't see often, like those are like hit and miss opportunities really. But
yeah,
when we saw that, I'm like, that is pro wrestling at its finest, because you know, you're just wrestling, you're having a good time, and that's what we were missing, I think, because you know, we just wanted to see pro
we weren't having a good time with WWE, and that's where it just was like
fell off for me.
Yeah, like, me too.
Like, I will remember watching some pay-per-views with you two, and we're all like sitting there at the end like, was that any
like, we just feel drained.
Like, it felt like a burden to me. Like,
yes, that's a good way. Yeah.
But with AEW came then this whole new fresh roster and, you know, new owner who's ambitious to do good. And I'm like, that's my company. Like, I want to help this company do what I can, you know, as a fan, you know.
In all the time that AEW has been around, from the start to the not so great times, which we will definitely get into, I have always stuck by this company. Now, that doesn't mean that I've watched every single show. I pretty much have watched every single Dynamite, by the way. So
same
there
here.
Is that. Rampage, I will admit, I have not watched in the longest time. Collision, I'll watch every now and again, depending on if I work. If I have off of work, you know, actually, I think there's going to be a Collision episode on in like an hour and a half. We'll probably go watch that together once we're done this. I've always wanted this company to succeed, and I've always wanted to be able to have a place, not just for the sake of the wrestlers themselves and them being able to get paid what they are owed as athletes, because for the longest time, pro wrestlers weren't given that much. And with AEW being there, it has given people significant amounts of money, people getting hundreds of thousands of dollars to just even like, even if they're just sitting in catering, not doing much, to prevent them from going to another company, or you have people that just aren't being used for TV time because there's only so much TV time to go around, whatever it is. So it's definitely benefited the wrestlers, and to be able to have more platforms for people to hone in on their craft and be able to be in front of a television screen. But not just for them, but for the sake of the fans, to allow the fans of pro wrestling to be able to choose. Now, yes, there's the whole tribalism part of it, and like, you know, people taking shots at one company and people taking shots at the other. And, you know, obviously we've kind of done that a little bit with WWE.
But at the same time, it's our pro wrestling heart that's telling us this. Like, you know, at the end of the day, we're pro wrestling fans, you know, like we can, you know, do this and that to this company. But at the end of the day, We want to see everybody succeed.
I want to see pro wrestling succeed. I know a couple months ago, like TNA was having like some really bad pay-per-view numbers. I don't know if they still are or not, but like when I heard that, I'm like, oh man, that really sucks. Like, I feel bad for them. I want them to succeed. I know New Japan lately has kind of been hit and miss in places because they haven't really built up any stars. Like, that kind of breaks my heart. It's like, I want to see everybody succeed. I want to see Ring of Honor succeed and get out of the hole that they've kind of found themselves in a little bit. Like, I want pro wrestling to succeed, because when pro wrestling succeeds, when all these guys succeed, it's like everybody wins. The wrestlers win, the fans win, like
the
everybody
wins.
Right. So I don't understand like the whole, like, you know, oh, tribalism against this company. Like, you can critique companies. That's okay. That's what I felt like we've done with WWE. We've gone over our experiences in why we don't like a company, and we will critique it. But ultimately, it's because we want to see them succeed.
Yeah, like, I'm just going to say this. I want WWE to succeed, but I feel like they got to do a bit more, you know? Like, everyone struggles, you know? Like, every company's not going to be perfect, you know? And, like, I will admit, AEW does have its flaws here and there, but
it does, and we will talk about them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, like, it's still a good product to me, you know? Like, with the roster they have now from 2019 to now,
you can criticize something and still think that it's good. Like, what's that one Pedro Pascal meme? Like, life is good, but it could be better. That's what AEW is.
Yeah, And that's with pro wrestling in general, you
yes,
know, like
absolutely.
Guys, we're just here to see pro wrestling at the end of the day, you know, like I just want to see good matches no matter what, you know, pro wrestling group I go to, you know, WWE, sure. AEW, Indies, like I just want to see good wrestling, you know, like I'm just a fan at heart.
I was so tapped out of WWE in 2019, like I said, and when I say that, like Becky and Kofi were the things I enjoyed, that was my last, like the very last bit of passion that I had in me. And after that was done, it was snuffed out just like that. When and I was like, yeah. I was so freaking like upset. And I'm like, cause I didn't want to hate pro wrestling. Like it had been a mm-hmm. part of me for so long that I was like, man, do I really have to walk away from this? And it turns out I didn't have to. So
I will admit when you guys were like staying in AEW, I was kind of afraid because I'm like, oh, I can't sure. leave. I can't leave this one company, you know, that I've been watching since you guys introduced me to it. But when you guys slowly transitioned to me, I'm like, you know what? It doesn't hurt to, you know, watch two platforms of wrestling.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Like, it doesn't hurt.
You can watch both. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's me being a wrestling fan, you know? And like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I will admit today, like, I still watch WWE on occasion, you know? But, you know, I can split it between WWE and AEW. And like, that's what I like because I'm a pro wrestling fan enjoying what that's out there. Like, that's just what I want to see at the end of the day.
And I've still been keeping up with WWE myself, especially like in ever since Cody Rhodes went back, I always kind of had like an eye on whatever Cody was doing. Cause I'm like, huh, this is like the first big AEW name to transition over to WWE. And this is one of the guys that started the company. What are they going to do with him? Are they going to end up giving him the good old 3-week push and then just leaving in an obscurity, or are they going to do something special with him? And as it turns out, you know, it took them a little bit longer than I think it could have, but they got there. So I'm like, you know what, Cody, I'm happy for you, dude. I was very happy with Cody winning the title at Last Mania. And we ended up watching that together. It was very cool. It was very cool.
For me, when the Judgment Day started, I'm like, wow, this is like the new faction that WWE has been waiting for a long time. And as you watch it grow, it's like, they might actually be something, you know, it's not like, you know,
when you say early Judgment Day, are you talking like when Edge was the leader, or are you talking like,
I'm talking like, after Edge.
Okay. Okay.
Like, yes, that was good.
The iteration of the Judgment Day. Okay. I thought that one was bad, by the way, but the second variation. Yes. Like with Dirty Dom and mm-hmm. Finn Balor and Rhea Ripley. Yeah. Okay.
Like that was when that's when I started watching Raw a little more now, because I'm like, that group sure. is actually good. And like, you know, it's good content, you know, and that's what I like to see as a fan at the end of the day. And so, yeah.
Did you follow any of the Bloodline stuff?
I will admit.
Not really.
That's okay. Yeah.
No, go ahead. What are you going to say?
I'm not a Bloodline guy. Like, I'm
not a Bloodline guy. That's okay.
Like, don't get me wrong. I like it. I like the story, but I like the Judgment Day better, honestly.
You like the Judgment Day better. Fair enough.
Yeah, like cool. I'm just not. Bloodline did not interest me, you know. Like, yes, they have good matches, but they didn't really interest me, honestly.
Sure, no, and I don't blame you. That there were definitely parts of the Bloodline story that definitely got stale quickly, but then there were other parts of it that I thought were very good. Yeah, man, that's why I like having you on here. We get to have like different opinions like this, and you know, kind of go back and forth on certain things. Do you want to get into like the top 10 lists that we got prepared today?
Let's do it, man. I'll start it out. So what we have,
just so everybody knows, we're going to do a segment right now. Our top 10 favorite AEW wrestlers of like the first 5 years. And this is going to be lists of our personal favorites. We're going to go through our top 10, like, you know, DJ will say his first 10, or not like his first 10, but his number 10. And then I'll do mine. And then he'll do his number 9. And then I'll do mine. And so on and so forth. So if you'd like, DJ, the floor is yours to begin.
All right, so for my top 10, we're going over the 5 years that AEW's been running. Let me just say, when I was putting this list together yesterday, Ryan, it was hard, man. Like, there are so many wrestlers. And
a lot of good ones, aren't there?
Ugh, so many.
Tony Khan's bank holds no bottom. It is endless, the amount of great talent that he's been able to bring into this company over the past 5 years.
Thank you, Tony Khan, for that. So for number 10, I'm going with Sammy Guevara because...
Ooh, okay.
Don't get me wrong. In 2019, when I first saw Sammy, I'm like, oh my gosh, this dude's getting pushed. You know, he's getting AEW title. He's getting the heavyweight title. But then, you know, a couple years come by, you know, and he's with Ty Mello. Don't get me wrong. I love his matches. I loved his matches. I loved his flips. I loved everything that he did. You know, he reminded me of a younger Hardy boy, like Matt and Jeff, you know?
Okay.
He reminded me of Matt and Jeff Hardy a bit.
Interesting.
Like, especially with the ladder matches, like, the dude is not, he's not afraid to, you know, put his life on the line. And I'm like, yeah. Like, see, I'm a fan of him. But sure. when him and Ty Conti got together, and yes, they are married today, but I will admit, I wasn't a big fan of the promo from the beginning. And like, when that started going on, I'm like, oh, Sammy, what are you doing?
I feel like this isn't the stuff to be bringing up on like a best list. I feel like this should be more on a like a worst list. But I get you. Yeah. Listen, I like Sammy Guevara too. I really do. But man, that Ty Mello nonsense on TV was there was no reason to put them together. It didn't work. It did not work.
Well, another thing with Sammy too is that he had the TNT title for like every other week or so, and I'm like,
yeah,
you either need to push the guy or you don't. And sure. With me, it just started getting old, and that's kind of why I put him down on my list, because I had a lot of hype for the guy, and I had a lot of belief that he could, you know, be AEW champion possibly.
I did too. Yep, me too.
But then once he got out of the Inner Circle, and then, you know, him and Jericho are fighting, him and MJF are fighting, which is a good match. And then, you know, the Four Pillar match comes, and I'm like, they're not going to do much with Sammy. They're not going to.
Yeah.
So that's kind of
I think even when he, I think whenever he comes back too, because I know he's been gone for a little bit, I think when he comes back, they're not even going to do that much with him. I think like, if anything, they're just going to put him back with Jericho.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope I'm wrong.
Hey, anything can happen in the world of pro wrestling. That's what we want to see as fans.
Agreed. So,
what's your number 10?
Okay, so my number 10 is interesting because this was before we said that we were going to do a tag team list, because I didn't think about them. Like, oh, we could just do a separate list for tag teams. But like, I feel like I need to bring them up because I think they have been so crucial to AEW, not just as a tag team, but even like as individual wrestlers. So for my number 10, and this is the only time I've done this, I've put a tag team on here, and that's FTR. I think that up until 2022, the Young Bucks were like the best tag team in the world. I kept saying that. I think by the time of 2022, my sentiment went more towards, no, actually, FTR is the best tag team in the world. And I was, again, NXT Revival. I loved it. I loved their tag matches, like DIY, all that stuff. Great. Freaking matches, man. But then they go up to the main roster, and as per freaking usual, they, you know, no one ever gets to use the way they should. And so, yeah, it was kind of like, okay, well, I don't know, I guess I'm not really too concerned about FTR anymore. But then, you know, they end up going to AEW. They're immediately in the tag title picture. They become AEW tag team champions. They're actually two-time AEW tag team champions at this point. Best tag team in the world, in my opinion. The matches that they had with the Briscoes, and I know that was more Ring of Honor, but at the same time, Ring of Honor and AEW, like, pretty much, you know, like, they're under the same banner at this point. That dog collar match between the Briscoes and FTR, holy crap, was that ever good. One of the best tag team matches ever, in my opinion.
Oh, hands down. Best match in both companies, honestly.
If I could pick up some matches that they've done in more recent time, the match that they had on Collision with Bullet Club Gold, Jay White and Juice Robinson, what a phenomenal TV match that was. The match that they had with Claudio and John Moxley of the Blackpool Combat Club, what was that, at Revolution, I think it was this year in 2024?
It was Revolution.
I kind of wish they would have done more of a follow-up after that match, but like, that match itself was incredible. So it's hard for me to look at that and go like, man, how can I not put them on this list in some way, shape, or form? And Scott, I almost said him by his WWE name, Dax Harwood, having amazing singles matches as well. And my big pitch is to put Dax Harwood in this year's Continental Classic when they run it back a second time. I would love to see Dax Harwood in the 2024 Continental Classic.
I wouldn't be surprised. That dude can put on a good single match. He just knows how to be a good wrestler in a tag team and as a singles. Like, I'm surprised he's not even getting pushed as a singles right now, honestly.
Okay, you're number nine, DJ. What you got?
All right. Number nine is Scorpio Sky. And he's been, he's not, I don't know where he is today, but like, when I first watched him with SCU, I'm like, oh, this guy can actually be a good singles guy too. Like, he's good with SCU, but like, you know, he could be something as a singles guy, you know? And when I saw him do his like flips, moves again, like, the dude knows how to be a pro wrestler, you know? Like, there's something that stands out, you know, to those guys that can, you know, be a pro wrestler in a tag team and singles.
I think Scorpio
Sky.
That's kind of how I feel about FTR.
Yeah.
Come full circle.
Yeah, it's like FTR, you know? Scorpio Sky can, you know, fight with SCU. He won the titles with Kazarian, I think, back in 2019, 2020.
Yeah, they were like the first AEW World Tag Team Champions.
Yeah, and he was doing good. And then, you know, when he's later on being a singles guy, he won the TNT title once, at least once, I think, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I'm like, yes, he can actually be a good singles guy. And I'm just like, this dude has the moves, he has swagger, and he actually had decent promos. I'm like, yeah, this is my guy, because
he
had that. There are very few guys to me that have that it factor. I feel like Scorpio Sky can be that guy, but I don't know. Like, I feel like he still can, but you know.
I think he still can. You just got to give him, you got to give everybody the TV time. You got to give people some time to be able to get themselves over.
Like, give them,
whether it's
like,
in matches. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Give him two matches and that man will be in the TNT title shot.
You could get him back in that TNT title picture for sure. Damn, I will admit, you actually surprised me with both your number 10 and number 9. I respect them both. So my number 9 is, I talked a little bit about him before, and that is the current AEW world champion at the time of this recording, Swerve Strickland. If you want to talk about a guy that got over, not just through his charisma, through his personality, but just from freaking wrestling, like that match that he had with Hangman Page, that death match or whatever the Texas, whatever death match stipulation it was, that was the moment, man, where it just went, like, everybody was like, holy crap, this Swerve Strickland is the man. And I had even said before, when him and Keith Lee were a tag team, and I think very highly of Keith Lee as well, I thought, I'm like, dude, both of these guys could be AEW world champions. You just got to give them the chance to do
it. Oh, yeah.
And lo and behold, you give Swerve Strickland the chance to do it, and he freaking knocks it out of the park. And there was a while that I was worried that they weren't going to do it because, like, oh, it messes up whatever plans they have or whatever. No, you got to go with someone when they're hot, and there was nobody hotter going into 2024 than Swerve Strickland in AEW.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Hands down. I totally respect that, man, because he's definitely helping the company right now, that's for sure.
The matches that he's had with Orange Cassidy, Nick Wayne, Darby Allin, Samoa Joe, Hangman Page, which has turned into like this amazing feud between those two guys. The matches that he was having in the Continental Classic, that was another thing that I think opened up Swerve Strickland to a lot of people as well, was his performance in that first Continental Classic. By the way, I love the concept of that tournament. I love that it's like their version of the G1. So yeah, just thought I'd put that out there. Okay, you're number eight.
All right.
Or anything else you want to say about Swerve?
Oh, no.
Go on to number eight. Okay, go on to number eight.
Number eight for me, the scapegoat, Jack Perry. I love that nickname for him. I love it for him.
I'm actually mad that I didn't put Jack Perry on my list. I should have.
Anyway, so when I put Jack Perry here, when I first saw Jack Perry, I'm like, okay, so he's a tag team guy because he was with Jurassic Express when they first started. And I'm like,
yep,
he wouldn't be a bad singles guy, you know? Like, I could see him getting a run. Like, once Jurassic Express, you know, split up in their own ways, you know, he gets, like, titles. He's getting these title shots. I'm like, oh, crap, he's actually doing good. Even when he was tag teaming with Luchasaurus, I'm like, split these guys apart, he's doing better. Like, he's going to do something for the company big time. I've said it since probably a while. Like, he's the cornerstone of AEW is youth. Like, they call it the four pillars, whatever. He's the reason why the youth movement is moving right now. And you see all these people coming in. It's because Jack Perry was right in the front of it when he started with the company. You see him in singles matches, tag teams. Like, the dude knows how to fight. He knows how to pro wrestle. And I will say this, when he turned into the scapegoat, he's had some sick promos, man. Like, he's just awesome.
I was at that New Japan show in Chicago when he came out with, you know, as like the full scapegoat gimmick and the Cry Me a River jacket. Oh my gosh, it was so good.
Like,
I loved it.
When he returns, I'm like, that is not the same Jack Perry from 2019. That is a grown man who knows how to be a pro wrestler. And just look at him now. The man is a champion now. And like,
yeah, current TNT champion at the time of this.
And to me, that's what is helping them right now, is because you're helping one of the young prospects that you started with from day one. You know, this wasn't some guy that came from one of the indies. He came in.
Well, he did come from the indies, but like, I think I get what you're trying to say though. Like, you took a guy that wasn't well known, because like, you know, the indies people know people, but at the same time, like, to a bigger audience, he's not as well known. But now you talk to, you know, any wrestling fan, most of them will know who Jungle Boy Jack Perry is.
Yeah.
And if I can just add as well, to talking about Jungle Boy when he first started, I to this day still believe that him and Luchasaurus should have been the first AEW World Tag Team Champions.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong, I thought SCU were fine, but to me, like, it was Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. Luchasaurus in particular was so freaking over in those first couple shows, man. Like, I would have taken advantage of that. But anyway, go on.
You can never go wrong with the original Jurassic Express with him, Luchasaurus, and Marco Stunt, you know?
And Marco Stunt, yeah.
Like, that was an entertaining group to watch.
Marco Stunt just recently showed up as well, like, on an episode of Collision, I think, to fight Jack Perry.
So actually?
I think it was, an open challenge, and he came out and answered Jack, so...
No way.
Yeah, it's crazy. Full circle moment, right? Yeah, for sure.
Miss him.
So, my number 8... You know, people say that Cody Rhodes, you know, the ace, it says in his Snoop Dogg song, "Ace keep acing." But I believe that the true ace of AEW is my number 8 on this list, and that's Jon Moxley. Man, Jon Moxley is far, what's the right way of saying, is far better in the wrestling world than Dean Ambrose ever was. The minute that this guy showed up in AEW on that first Double or Nothing show, you knew that this guy, it was like a different switch went off, and he was a completely different person. And it's like, okay, yeah, we see a familiar face. We know this face. We've seen it for years, but it is a completely different guy. This guy was tapped in, and he has been the guy through every time that this company has gone through a downward spiral. He is the break glass in case of emergency guy, a la everything that happened with Brawl Out and CM Punk. Giving the, it'd be like, all right, well, you know, we got this guy gone. Jon Moxley is going to be our champion. When Punk gets injured, he was the interim champion. When Punk got fired, or not fired, but suspended and hurt and everything, he was the world champion then. I believe he's been a 3-time champion at this point. Had this incredible feud with Orange Cassidy for the international title, and Orange Cassidy's reign, we'll get into it, was absolutely phenomenal as international champion. Jon Moxley has always been that guy that whenever you need someone in there, he is that guy. He is that main event level guy. And for the longest time too, it was like, even when Moxley wasn't in the world title picture, he was still in that main event, like, section of the roster. It wasn't like, oh, you know, with some people, it's like, okay, you get a world title shot, but then you're immediately brought back down to the mid card. It's like, no, this guy has stayed at a consistent level. He was the current IWGP world champion. I think, well, apart from when he lost it at Forbidden Door, but he was just IWGP world champion as well. It just, to me, shows you how valuable this guy is to the wrestling world. And he has been one of my favorite guys consistently to watch in AEW since day one.
Oh, man, there's so many people, man. Like, it's hard.
I know, this is hard. 10. This was so hard. I know.
Oh,
there's too many great wrestlers.
Oh,
it's a good problem to have, by the way.
Oh, very good problem. Oh, man, number 7. Oh, man, I'm going with Hangman because the reason I chose Hangman is because that dude is a good wrestler, but to me, when I look for a cowboy as a pro wrestler, he's that guy. Because the dude entered with a horse for some pay-per-views, you know, like Full Gear when you guys went to that Full Gear.
Cool. Yeah.
Like, the dude just knows how to make the sick entrances. He knows how to fight with his, you know, signatures, and, you know, he just knows how to fight. To me, he fights like a cowboy, and I like cowboys and all that, so it was pretty cool to see that. And I will not forget when I watched that Full Gear when he won the AEW title. I'm like, wow, that is a story to remember, because the first pay-per-view, Jericho beat him for the AEW title. He didn't win it because, you know, it was like, oh, okay, I guess. Are we going to see Hangman, you know, do something here? We didn't for a while, you know, because that was when AEW was starting to get their foots down in the door, you know? And when Hangman was growing, he's like, why are you not making this guy champion? Because this dude is good. He knows how to put on good promos. The man can fight. Like, I don't think I've seen a cowboy who can fight hard like Hangman could, but he's just he can fight. And then when Hangman's like doing his thing, like, no one can match up to him. He has the style, charisma, something you would want in a pro wrestling cowboy to me. And to me, that's what I like, and that's why Hangman's one of my favorites.
I'm going to save my thoughts on Hangman Page because, you know, he may or may not end up being on my list. A little bit of a spoiler. So with that, I think I'm going to go into my number 7 on this list. You know, he's only one of the best to ever do this freaking thing, and that being Bryan Danielson. I don't know what I could say to, like, hype this guy up more than this dude already is. I mean, if we're just even talking his stuff alone in AEW, like, yes, you know, he's done stuff in WWE. His reputation preceded him in Ring of Honor and in the indies back in the day. But since being in AEW, the amazing pay-per-view matches that he's had with people like MJF, with Will Ospreay, which is, I think, honestly, one of my favorite wrestling matches ever, like, at this point. Talking about the matches that he's had with Ricky Starks, Miro, Okada, the technical wrestling match that he had with Zack Sabre Jr. at WrestleDream was freaking incredible. And it's not even just the pay-per-view matches, it's the television matches. That match that he had with Kenny Omega to start out Dynamite like years ago. Oh my gosh, absolutely incredible. The matches that he's had with Eddie Kingston. Do you remember the Rampage pre-show that they did that one time? Because they were going to go head-to-head with SmackDown one night. And he had this match with Minoru Suzuki. And it was like, bro, this is a Rampage pre-show. And you were out there having the best freaking match. Like, what are you doing, bro? My gosh, man. Oh.
How can I forget that?
So good.
I cannot forget that.
The matches that he's had with Hangman as well. Oh my gosh. I don't know what else to say.
For my number 6, we might have a disagreement here, but I put Kenny Omega as my 6, honestly.
Okay.
And I don't get me wrong, I love Kenny. Like, from the moment I watched him in that match with Moxley, the Lights Out match, I'm like, man, that dude he's a wrestler, you know? Like,
yeah.
If you did your My Player in the video game or whatever, Kenny Omega would be my guy, because the dude has wrestling moves. That the dude can do everything. Flips, counters, holds, signature.
V-triggers.
Like, yep, the V-triggers, thank you. Like, the man is a total package, and he has decent promos too, but his fighting can back him up, you know? Like, it can back him up, and I'm just, like, sitting there like, yeah, this dude is going to be a main card guy. He's awesome, and, like, I will never forget that heel run he had after the pay-per-view when Don Callis helped him win the title, AEW title.
Oh, yes, yes.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
We saw something that we may not see him do again, honestly, because of how, have that run he had as a heel. Like,
oh, as world champion. Okay, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
like, I see.
We may not have that ever again. I know what you mean.
Like, we may never see that again, because what he did was something that not a lot of wrestlers can say, because the dude is like, he's doing all this amazing stuff. And, you know, he's doing this without backup, you know, like, you know how the Bucks are heel right now and all that stuff.
Sure.
He did it without the Bucks. He had Don Callis. Yes. But the man could carry the company on his back, for crying out loud. Like, that's how good Kenny Omega is.
He was the belt collector for a little bit. He was going around and winning other people's world championships, you know?
Oh yeah. Like, the dude knows how to collect belts. He knows how to win. He's got the swagger. Like, for me, That's like one of my favorites right there. Like the dude is good, and like you can put him in a lights out match, barbed wire match. Like the dude is willing to put his body on the line. To me, that is my favorite, a good wrestler. Another good wrestler in my book. So yeah.
We're actually not as far off as you might think we are, but at my number six is freaking Eddie Kingston. I think the world of Eddie every time I get to watch him wrestle. I wish that this company would do more with him, because it always feels like there's start-stop pushes with him. And I think that, you know, like, oh, he goes into this feud with Jericho, and then, like, you know, he's stuck in this never-ending feud with him. And the times when they actually get to do stuff with him, you are invested not only in him as a wrestler, but him as a character. The brotherhood that he has with Jon Moxley, every time that Moxley and Eddie are on screen together, it's always, oh, what's going to happen next? And it's must-see television for me every time I'm watching wrestling. It's one of the stories, Eddie and Mox, that I am really invested in. And I always wish that they would have won the World Tag Team titles together at some point. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened yet. But him going into the Continental Classic and that whole storyline of like, you know what, I'm going to raise the stakes of this tournament. I'm going to put my belts on the line and try and prove that I deserve to be the champion that I am. Going into that tournament, like he beats freaking Bryan Danielson in the semifinals of it and beats Jon Moxley in the finals. I wasn't sure if they were going to have Eddie win the whole thing, but I am so glad that they did and gave him that moment. Again, I wish they would still do more with him. I also understand that this company in AEW has so many freaking people on their roster that they aren't, you know, that need pushes and everything like that. Man, Eddie's always been one of those guys I've just been a massive fan of personally. And I get he's not for everybody, but I big fan of Eddie here.
I respect it. All right. Yeah. So for my number five, man, when we get down to five or into the end, it's going to be hard for me, because I'm not saying this is like my solid list here, but like,
sure.
Anything can change, you know, like for top 10.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, of course. Anything's subject to change. I agree.
Oh, man. I would say for my number five right now is Adam Cole. Like, I've been a fan of Adam Cole when he was in the independent wrestling scene and all that. But, like, I just love that guy, because the dude, he has some of the best promos I've seen in a long time. Because
he's good.
When I look at promos, I look at Adam Cole, because the man knows how to put on a good promo. But he also knows how to put on a good five-star match, you know, like with the boom, his promos. And when he always does the Adam Cole baby, I'm like, oh my goodness, why can't
people respond to it, man? Every time he puts those hands up and the whole crowd goes, Adam Cole baby.
That is one thing that all wrestlers can agree on, because the man knows how to draw in the crowd, persuade people to like him. And he just knows how to back it up with his talent. And it's hard, but I love Adam Cole. There's no reason why I can't say he's not one of my favorites.
I hate that I don't have Adam Cole on my list, but again, it's just a testament to how many people are on this roster that I love. But yeah, man, that does not mean that I do not think highly of Adam Cole. I love Adam Cole. He is such a phenomenal heel. Like as a babyface, like, yeah, the stuff with MJF, like, that was cool. But when he gets to go out there as a heel, whether it's like the Undisputed Era stuff, whether it's you know, like when he first came into AEW and like him kind of being a part of the Elite and making it feel like, oh, maybe he's going to take it out from underneath the Kenny Omega. The dude is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So for my number five, you brought him up before, and that's why I said I don't think you're as far off as you might think we are. And that's Kenny Omega. The stuff that Kenny did like before AEW, I think I do like a lot of that stuff more than some of the stuff that he's done in AEW, but that's not to say that I don't like what Kenny has done in AEW. Like you said before, I love his world title run. I loved him and Hangman being a tag team and them holding the tag titles. That match that they had with the Young Bucks is, I think, my favorite tag match ever. Like the one that they had at the first Revolution.
Oh, hands down. That was one of the best tag team matches ever.
The matches that him and the Young Bucks had as a trio, becoming the trio tag team champions and having, I know the first run was only like a day because then they had to relinquish it. But when they had that second run and they had the best of seven series with Death Triangle, I know it didn't do well television viewer wise. Personally, I loved it. I not saying we need to see stuff like that happen all the time, but every once in a blue moon to have something like that. And I thought all their matches were truly special. There was just something different, like especially during that time as well, where like AEW was in a little bit of a down period. But every time I knew, like, okay, here we go. They're going to put on a trios match between the Elite and Death Triangle. This is going to be good. I can't wait for this. Kenny Omega has thrived in every single position that this company has put him in. Singles, trios, tag team. So it's hard not to sit there and say, oh, you know, well, yeah, this guy doesn't deserve to be on my list. Because he does deserve to be on the list. Abso-freaking-lutely. He's one of the best wrestlers on the planet. One of the best wrestlers of all time, in my opinion. And I think he still is one of the best to do it today.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely the top five.
I respect that. I respect your opinion there. Oh, man. Number four. We're not that far off, like you were saying. I might kick myself later after this, but like at number four, I have Jon Moxley. And
okay.
I love Moxley. Man. Like from the moment he entered, you know, not like, you know, as Dean Ambrose, but like, you know, as the man, you know, like you could tell like the vibe was different around him. He was like meaning business. He's ready to fight. Like one of the best moments of Moxley was when he, you know, was fighting Kenny Omega in early in AEW days. And he like, you know, gave him a driver.
Oh, the paradigm shift.
Paradigm shift through the table. And I'm like, okay, yes. that is a totally different man, because, you know, you see him in the other companies and he's like, oh, okay. But then when he's like in AEW, he's like, I'm not holding back anymore. I'm here on business. And like the man is, he's doing all this stuff. Like we were mentioning with Kenny and his run, you give Moxley any kind of run or like, you know, any kind of match. And he's like, oh yeah, I'll do it. Like you see him do all these sorts of matches, and it could be any kind of push, and the man will give you a 5-star match. Like that is a guy right there. And to top it off, the man has some of the best promos I've seen too. Like it's awesome. Like the dude can like literally paradigm shift someone and he wins in an instant. And then, you know, he's like talking like a crazy man.
He's got the paradigm shift, right? Like as his finisher. But like whenever he can't put people away with that, he's got like the ultimate death move, you know, called the Death Rider. It's like a variation of the paradigm shift. But instead of, you know, just dropping him on his head, you like lift him up and then drop him down on your head. I love that. I love when wrestlers have that where it's like, I have my finisher, but whenever this doesn't work, this is the move I'm going to put you away with. And then you're done for sure. No one kicks out.
And like when I see Moxley, you know, in these barbed wire matches, you know, or in these steel cages matches, like,
yeah,
you could tell like some wrestlers are scared of that match. Moxley is like bringing it on and he's ready for the fight. Like the man has no fear. Like the dude is bloody enough from these matches, but he's like, give me more. I want more. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he is awesome. Like
I'm glad you brought up the blood. I'm
like seriously
mad I forgot to.
Like to me, Moxley is one of those few wrestlers, like I said with a couple before, but like he's one of those guys that has the it factor again, because like
yep,
he will go through blood, sweat, tears. Like the man just wants to put on a good show, and to me that's why he's in my where he is in my top 10. He is just
no that makes sense, man. Yeah, dude, that was like the meme for the longest time too. Like, oh, Jon Moxley bleeds every match, you know, and then he, you know, kind of stopped doing it for a little bit and everyone was like, where's the blood? But yeah, no, for sure. I definitely respect that. At my number four, not only the greatest international champion, but my favorite title run in this entire company, and that's Orange Cassidy. His arc from the start of him being like this lazy guy to being like, oh, I'm actually going to try hard and I'm going to destroy you now. It is. I love the character progression that Orange Cassidy has had. Him having, I think I wrote it down in my notes here, 31 total title defenses in that international title run. Like, are you kidding me? Having the matches that he was having too with like Luchasaurus, Rey Fénix, who else was there? There was Shibata, the one that we went to in Milwaukee, where he fought Buddy Murphy. Like that was or Buddy Matthews. I'm thinking of his WWE name. The matches that he's had with Swerve, with his former partner in Wheeler Yuta. Every time Dynamite would start, it would be like you'd hear Jane hit over the loudspeaker, and I'd say another Dynamite, another Orange Cassidy international title defense. Because that was the vibe for a little bit, was like every time that Dynamite started, you would hear that music. I know my friend Miles, he likes Where Is My Mind better for Orange Cassidy's theme, and I completely understand that. And I also really like that song, so I'm not saying that it's bad. But for me, man, every time I heard Jane, it just gave me this good feeling of like, oh, I'm going to see a really good match here to start off Dynamite. And it's with this guy that I'm invested in and in his title reign and him going through all the injuries as well through that and trying to, you know, fight and scratch and claw even harder every single time to try and hold on to that title, to the point where you start to see him like maybe trying to, you know, bend the rules a little bit, maybe don't mind taking a count out victory here and there, because he is so desperate to hold on to this title that he has been clinging to. Oh my God. It's my favorite title run in all of AEW.
I totally respect that. And moving along here, for my number three, I gotta go with Darby Allin. Like, he was a day one.
Can I just say something? He's also my number three, so we can talk about this together.
Oh, let's go. Well, the reason why I like Darby so much is because when he came out with the skateboard for his entrance, I'm like, okay,
that's cool. Yeah.
That is so unordinary, because, you know, you see wrestlers fight, well, walk out, run out, you know, he comes up with a skateboard and I'm like, oh, okay. And then, you know, when you see him fight, he's just like, wow. He's like one of those like aggressive fighters that you want to see, because, you know, he will go through anyone. Like, remember the match he had with Brody Lee in the early days and all that? Like,
I don't think Darby Allin did have a match with Brody Lee. That was one of the matches that I wanted to see, but I don't think that actually happened.
Wait, no, not Brody Lee. Miro. Like, he would.
Yes.
He would,
okay. Yes. Yeah. Miro. Yep.
Yeah. Miro. So he could fight Miro. He could fight Jungle Boy. Like, the man will fight anyone. And to me,
sure,
he's really awesome to me. Like, his finisher to me is like probably one of the best I've seen. He reminds me a bit of Moxley in a way, because, like, you know, he does like all these, like, you know, tomb matches and all that. Well, tombstone matches, you know, and he does all these like stadium stampedes and all that. And like, he's willing to put his body on the line. Like, I think there were a couple times when we're watching this, you and I are like, oh crap, please don't kill yourself, man. Like,
yes,
we need you for Dynamite. We need you for Dynamite.
For sure.
Like,
there was a period of time when you go back and watch some of those early AEW shows, like within the first year or so, every time that that Darby Allin went off for the coffin drop, people got off their feet. Like, that move was so over. Everyone loved it. I'll admit, I had no idea who he was when he first started. I remember that he was going to have that match with Cody at Fyter Fest, the first match that they had. And I was like, okay, yeah, Cody versus this Darby Allin guy, whatever. And by the end of that match, I was like, holy crap, Darby Allin, I think, might actually be one of my favorite guys on this roster. It was, he won me over in that match. And I think it's one of those examples of like, I know people like to say like, oh, you can't get over in wrestling unless you have a good story. I completely disagree. Wrestling for me, you get over to me anyway. You can get over by doing a good story, but also by being a good wrestler and having great matches, like that stuff that wins you over in my heart. And Darby Allin just had this style about him that nobody else had, this daredevil style that, don't get me wrong, because like you also have like a lot of different high flyers in wrestling and things like that, but just something about Darby Allin that was different, and it struck me, and the face paint and the story behind the face paint, and what an incredible wrestler.
Darby's a wrestler that you are intrigued by, and he's just like, when you say he's a daredevil, he's like, oh my goodness, you never know what he's gonna do every week, and like he's gonna do like a breathtaking move, and I'm just like, oh,
he'll scare you.
It'll scare you.
Like, but, oh no, this dude wants to climb Mount Everest. And he didn't get the chance to do it, but he still might.
If he climbs Mount Everest, I'm going to go nuts, because that man is a daredevil.
And he said he was going to put the AEW flag on top of Mount Everest. Much love and respect to that man. So number two for you, I think, is what I'm right?
Yeah, this is getting hard, man. Like, this is getting fun, but...
Who you got?
My number, MJF.
All right. I was wondering if he was going to be on your list.
He was an honorable
mention on mine. I'll say that.
Oh, bro. I think I can back him up here, but I'm just going to say this. I don't think I have enough evidence like your brother does, because your brother's like a whole different.
My brother Chris is like a diehard MJF fan.
Like, there's no one else like him for MJF fans.
There's no one in, I have said this for years, there is no one that is allowed to cheer for MJF except for my brother and New Jersey. Because that's where he's from, right? Was it New Jersey?
No, it was New York.
Oh, New York. Okay, yes. So his hometown and my brother are the only people that are allowed to cheer for him. When everyone else started cheering for MJF, I was like, oh, what is this? This ain't right.
What MJF struck me was like, you know, you see these heels and all that, but then there's MJF. I'm putting him in his own category because the dude has some of the best promos that you will ever see as a heel. Like, you know, there's those heels, you know, that, you know, can do good promos, but MJF is his own category because the dude can, you know, make it, you know, about wrestling to personal and then, you know, to another level. And like, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing, man? This is just a promo here. We're not talking about life stories here and all that. Like, seriously, I will not forget what's, I wasn't an MJF fan at first, I will admit, but what helped me get, helped him get on my top 10 a bit more was that Thanksgiving promo with him and CM Punk.
And we were there live for that. That was the Chicago show, right? Yeah, I remember that. That was good.
That is what helped me become an MJF fan a little more because I watched him grow in AEW. I'm like, okay, so he's one of the best heels in the businesses, you know, like he's probably one of the better heels, you know, like, you know, he's not like, you know, like Darby Allin or Moxley, you know, with the aggressiveness, you know, daredevilish, you know,
but he, doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to, which is probably why he's one of the best heels, you know, because he can get away with any trick in wrestling. And yet he still finds ways to win. Like, you do not see that in a heel wrestler. He can, you know, talk a big game and be like, okay, he's going to get his butt kicked, whatever. But then somehow the man has a ring hidden in his pants, whatever. And I'm like, who does that?
This dude got a drop kick over. And I went crazy for it every time.
Like, seriously, he earned my respect with his promos and the way he's able to get away with half of his stuff. Because those most heel wrestlers can somewhat do that, but MJF can do all of it. Like, he is the heel wrestler, in my opinion. Not saying that his babyface runs were not bad, they were, but when he's at a heel, that's when you can develop him into like a superstar.
The babyface run for MJF was like hit and miss in some places. But yeah, like his run as a heel, holy, oh my gosh. Yeah, you pretty much said it all. I don't think there's anything that I could say to further get it. But like the dude, like he came back at that what pay-per-view was that? Forbidden Door.
Forbidden Door.
Yeah, and like fans going crazy for him. And he just off mic goes, over as like that, and it was true. He was like the guy that got one of the like biggest reactions that night. He's one of the most over guys on the roster, whether you like him or whether you hate him, whether he's a babyface or a heel. I don't know what else I can say about MJF, man. He is truly every bit of the star that he thinks that he is.
All I can say is that when he was world champion, that was when I was starting to like enjoy his heel run more, because like, he is putting on good promos. He's finding ways to cheat, you know, get away with this, you know, in ways kind of making me hate him. But at the same time, as a pro wrestling fan, I'm like, that is what I want from a heel. Like, that is every category of a heel. But, you know, increase that 2 times, that's MJF for me. Like, he is that good of a heel.
I honestly wonder if CM Punk doesn't get hurt and CM Punk doesn't get himself into trouble, does MJF still become world champion when he does? I don't know. It's tough, isn't it? It's that'd be curious to see what our listeners think. If CM Punk, if Brawl Out doesn't happen, does MJF still become world champion at that Full Gear where he beats Moxley?
Or that's
does it happen a little bit later, or does it not even happen at all?
That's whole debate, man.
A wrestling what if. That's a wrestling what if.
That's a whole debate for another episode. A good discussion, but like,
yeah,
holy cow. So yeah, what's your number two?
And my number two, man, that was my favorite in AEW for the longest time and still is one of my favorites, obviously, and that's freaking Hangman Page. I talked about him like at the top of the show. That first promo when he said I want to be the first world champion, that resonated with me, and I caught on to that, and I'm like, okay, huh, he's the first guy to actually talk about there being an AEW world title. Interesting. And then he goes on this run. He loses to Chris Jericho. And that only made me more invested in the character of Hangman. Because you start every week, you start to see him like going around the crowd. He starts having more beers and stuff, right? Like you feel him losing himself. Yeah, he wins the tag team titles with Kenny Omega, but you know that like, okay, this guy can be doing more, but he's on this downward spiral. He can't help himself. And it causes him to eventually lose his friends in the Elite, all of them, even Kenny. We get to this point where you think like, okay, this dude can't get any lower. He's got nothing. And all of a sudden the Dark Order starts to pick him up, the like babyface, you know, version of the Dark Order after Brody's passing. And it, to me, I think it's my favorite story in AEW of him going from losing the title at the first, you know, big pay-per-view after Double or Nothing with All Out, going through that and going through the downward spiral with the Elite to finding the Dark Order, to getting back into the world title picture and beating Kenny Omega at the show that me and my brother and our friend Miles all went to together. And I was like, man, if nothing else comes out of that night, I actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I still do have that travel vlog up on my channel Sector for Nerds. So if you go under my playlist and look for my pro wrestling tab, that video should be there. And man, I was just so happy and so excited when Hangman won that title. And like him, the moment that got me the most too is when the Dark Order offer him a beer and he just takes it and tosses it aside and just runs, like just gives them a large hug or whatever. Like, I don't want a beer. I just want to be with you guys. Such heartwarming stuff, man. And then I'm not even done talking about Hangman yet, because this current feud that he has with Swerve Strickland has made him unhinged, and with every reason. That man broke into his home, threatened his child, and the people still chose Swerve Strickland. And that happening has caused this even new downward spiral for Hangman, but one that isn't filled necessarily with depression and sadness, but more with vengeance and anger and him trying to get back to Swerve. I'm very curious to see. I know this is going to be going out later after Blood and Guts and stuff, but I am so curious about what happens in that Blood and Guts match, what happens with the Swerve Strickland Hangman feud going forward, because I think that's something you can always go back to. In like, you know, you have a match 1 year, maybe you give it in like another year and a half's time and you go back and you do it again. Oh my gosh, Hangman, one of the most guys that I'm just invested in the most in AEW for sure.
I totally respect that, man. I totally get that. For number one, we might have a little disagreement here, but I will back up mine.
Okay.
He got me from day one.
I'm gonna say.
From the moment the press conference in, I'll give you a hint. Okay. He started probably one of the better factions in 2019. I'm going with Le Champion, Chris Jericho. And I'll tell you why. I have evidence to back up my claim here. The reason why I put Jericho as one is when you see him at the press conference and he says, AEW is Jericho, I'm like, okay, we're getting somewhere now. And then when he comes out with the faction of the Inner Circle, I'm like, now that is a group right there. You know, you get these ragtag guys, the Santana Ortiz coming, you get Jake Hager, the muscle of the group, to back him up, and then you get upcoming Sammy Guevara, who I mentioned earlier was high on my list. I'm like, okay, this is an upcoming unit here. You know, I'm getting like the Shield vibes, you know, when they started out. And when Jericho, you know, he's doing all his stuff, when I saw the Judas Effect when he faced it, Hangman Page, I'm like, okay, that is a Jericho I did not see before. That is something else. And when Dynamite
first aired, he is reinventing himself, yes.
Yeah, he reinvented himself. And when he was on TNT at first, he's got the championship. He's like, well, a champion, you know, the many different versions of Jericho. I'm like, okay, we're getting somewhere now. And when he's with the Inner Circle, you know, he's coming out with Judas. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he sings his own theme song. He can back him up with his group, and the man is just an all-around package, in my opinion, because he can come out with this Inner Circle group, come up with these guys that some people may have not heard of or forgotten of, and make them into the best unit in AEW. And that run in 21 was probably when they started trending downwards for the Inner Circle. So in 2019 and 20, Inner Circle was probably like one of my favorite groups to watch personally, because those guys could interfere, give good matches, good promos, and like the Stadium Stampede matches were probably some of my favorite matches with the Inner Circle.
Yeah, the first one was pretty good, I thought. Yeah.
I love the first one because they were just so awesome. And like, well, to see Jericho lead that group, to me, it's like, so he not only reinvented himself, but the man is also helping people get over, you know, like, you know, as they say in the pro wrestling business.
I would disagree there.
I know. Keep going. I'm going to keep going. I have evidence.
Okay.
Like he was helping them get over somewhat, even though we can disagree with this and all that.
That's fine.
Like he kind of helped the Inner Circle, you know, get their feet in the drawer and then get their feet wet. And so, yes, Jericho is he's something, but I like him personally because the man can put on good promos. The dude has the Judas effect. Like, name someone else who can do the Judas effect as good as he can, or, you know, the Walls of Jericho.
Andrade.
Oh.
No. He's got a great spinning back fist. But anyway, go on.
Don't mention him. Okay. Anyway, so Jericho can, he has all these different things. And, you know, when he does the fireballs and all that, I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, yep. Oh, yeah. And like the man can be with any group. There's people that are in groups, and then there's those people that start groups. Jericho is the faction because, you know, he can, as we're seeing today, he can bring people together that you forget of. And like he is just a guy who's the leader. And is always the leader to me. Like, I like the guy who can be a leader, and it doesn't matter what faction you can be a part of. If you can create the Inner Circle, you can create, oh crap, what's that? With Danny Garcia, you know that faction with Danny Garcia and Big Daddy Magic?
Yeah.
Anna Jay.
Inner Circle 2.0. I don't even remember that. Oh, the Jericho Appreciation Society. That's what it is. Yeah.
Bro made a whole faction based on himself. Like, who can do that today? Like, that to me is why he's my one, because if you can go out and make all these different factions, that is just awesome right there. And like the man can win titles. Like, we all know that.
Yeah.
And then you're going to hate me for this. And I'm sure Miles is going to hate this when he sees this too, but like what he's doing for the FTW title right now, I'm the learning tree gimmick. Anyways, guys, that's why I like it. That's why Jericho's my one. That's all I'm saying. I'm sorry, Ryan. I'm sorry, man.
Keep going.
I'm sorry. Anyways, I'm sure I'm going to probably get backlash off of this.
I will say this, DJ. I will actually give you a little bit of credit. We are only in episode one of this podcast, and I don't think there is anything that you and I could disagree with more as far as who the best wrestler in AEW is. But yet again, that is your list. That is fine.
I know.
To give Jericho credit, him being in AEW at the start was very crucial. I don't think anybody can deny that. Him being the first world champion, I think, was the essential move. Like, yeah, I was like, you know, I wanted Hangman to win, but I also understood the reasoning of why Chris Jericho was the first world champion, right? He's a recognizable name. People know who he is. You're going into television on a big network for the first time ever. You want to be able to have a recognizable name. I understand all of that.
And Jericho's a big name.
Yes. And I thought that world title run that he had was fairly good. I will give him that. The match that he had with Cody was good. The match with Mox, the TV match that he had with Darby. I did like that all. And the other thing that I liked from Chris Jericho was the Ring of Honor world title run that he had. And that was during the time of like Mox, the break glass in case of emergency, John Moxley being the world champion. And then Ring of Honor started, you know, like Tony Khan had just bought Ring of Honor. And then Jericho won the title that four way. And I was watching it recently, the one with him, Claudio Bryan and Guevara at Full Gear 2022, was a really good match. I enjoyed that one. And I enjoyed the match that he had, that match that he had with Tomohiro Ishii, where they're slapping each other all throughout the picture in picture, and they come back and they're still slapping each other. That was really cool. I think that is all the good that I have to say about Chris Jericho and AEW.
Before you get to like the criticisms, if you can.
I don't even have to. We can save it for another time.
Oh, for sure. But like What another thing with Jericho is, like, you know, he's working with some of the younger wrestlers, and he's not necessarily like Bryan Danielson, you know, like putting them over, but, you know, he's helping them, you know, grow as a wrestler and all that. And, like, that's kind of why I like Jericho, you know, because he's like veteran presence where he can go to hook Daniel Garcia and, you know, have good matches with them and all that.
Sure. Yes. And I'm not sitting here denying that Chris Jericho still can't have good matches, but I think if I go hard on Jericho today, I, like, we're going to be here for like another hour. So I think we're going to say we can make that a whole nother podcast, bro. I think that's honestly, if we continue onward with this podcast, depending on how, you know, many episodes we plan to do and how far we get this, I am so down for having a debate about Chris Jericho. And heck, we could probably even bring Miles in on this too, because I know he would probably have a lot to say as far as Jericho as well.
We can bring our whole round table, and I think it'll be a good hour conversation.
I think it would be a good discussion. I think that is definitely something that we can save for another time. But moving on to my number one, this man, maybe it's a little bit of recency bias, but at the same time, I think that this man has more than proven himself as my number one. And it's someone that I've been keeping, that I kept my eye on and had heard about for so many years on the indies. He had been with the indies and, you know, a lot longer than I thought he would be. He was with New Japan for a little bit. And every time that I watch this guy wrestle on like a random indie show or a random, you know, Ring of Honor, or not Ring of Honor, but like a New Japan show or a, you know, like a TNA pay-per-view, perhaps like having a match with Mike Bailey. But that number one person for me is Will Ospreay. This man, I don't think I have ever seen a wrestler from the minute that he came in just had match of the year with everybody that he has ever been in the ring with. His style is like, people say like, oh, he's just another high flyer. There is not another person on this planet that can do the things that Will Ospreay does. You can say that, oh yeah, he's just another high flyer. No, this dude is doing this on another level. No one is doing it like him. And in my opinion, I think he is the best wrestler in the world today. I was so worried. Like, listen, if he would have went to WWE, his style would have changed. I feel like a pretty much given the way that they do their things. And if you don't believe me, look at people. Everyone has to change their style when they go. Look at Samoa Joe. Look at, you know, all these other people that went there, that their styles all had to change. And then they go out of WWE. John Moxley is another one, for example. And they go out of the indies, or they go out of WWE, and you're like, oh crap, this guy can actually wrestle. Oh my gosh. Let's look at this year alone. The match that he had with Takeshita at Revolution, the match that he had with Danielson, which is, again, I think my match of the year and one of my favorite wrestling matches of all time, the one that he had with Bryan Danielson. I love the story that they're doing with the Tiger Driver. I think, you know, the match they had with MJF recently, I think they overplayed it maybe a little bit, but I still appreciate the sentiment of what they're doing with it. And the match that he had with Roderick Strong, where he beat him for the international title, this man being international title, the match that he had with Swerve Strickland. This man had only been in AEW for less than a year as an active member of the roster. And on his third pay-per-view, he is in a main event match for the world championship. What else is there to say to that? I mean, I know you'll probably disagree with me on that, obviously. But yeah, man, what he did for the international title as well brought some prestige back to that. The casino gauntlet matches. He has been the absolute ace. I love the concept of the casino gauntlet, and Will Ospreay is a big part of why, because every time that he goes in there, I'm like, all right, who's going to come out next? Oh, Will Ospreay's in this? What? And he has all these like interactions with wrestlers. I'm like, oh, I do want to see that in a singles match. Will Ospreay versus Jay White? I'll watch that in a singles match. Oh, what's he's going up against Rey Fénix? I'll see that in a singles match, please. Oh my gosh, I love Will Ospreay so freaking much.
I get it, man. Like, and I totally respect it too. Like, Will Ospreay is good to me, and I respect him for that. And you know, that's why we have these debates, you know, because we get to know each other's opinions and all that. And I totally respect it. Like, he's one of my top wrestlers, too.
He's just not in your top 10. That's fine.
Well, I like to go back, you know, to the 5 years and all that, because there have been so many wrestlers that have been in the company and all that. And like,
sure,
I love Ospreay. I love Okada. But, you know, I want to, you know, make sure I, you know, give some attention to some guys that haven't been in for a bit.
And you're right. And Will, and like I said before, Will Ospreay has not been around the entire time that he's been with AEW, you know, since the start of AEW. But I just think in the short time that he has been there, I mean, he immediately won me over. And like I said, I already knew about him, like from, you know, from previous shows that I had seen, but he comes into AEW and I'm like, oh, okay, how much is his style going to change? But dude is still freaking Will Ospreay. And I absolutely adore him for it.
The man knows how to put on five-star matches. That's for sure.
I don't even know if I want to use the term like five-star matches, but this dude, just like every time that he's on a show, he usually has the best match on the card.
Oh yeah, hands down.
And at least the match that I'm into the most. Again, like I love his style. I love the fact that he's got like three finishing moves between like the Oz Cutter. He's got the Hidden Blade. He's got Stormbreaker. And then he's got this death move that they're telling this whole story around with the Tiger Driver. And I, like I said, I love it. And I hope one of these days that, if it hasn't happened yet after this recording, I hope that there is just one day where this guy decides, no, you know what? I have this move in my arsenal. If this is what I have to do to win, this is the move that I'm going to use to win. If I'm going up in main event level matches and I can't put someone away with the Hidden Blade, I can't put somebody away with Stormbreaker, I have no choice but to pull out the Tiger Driver because you don't choose to stay down. That's what I hope they get to with this Tiger Driver story.
For sure. I totally get it, man. And I respect it. Like, you have a good list of wrestlers and I totally respect them, man. Like,
and yeah. Yeah, I respect like 9 out of 10 on your list.
I know. I told you.
I'm messing around with you. I know.
I know the first one might be a little bit of debate, but
Have a debate about it for sure. But listen, that's your list. Hey, I always say with when I was doing videos for top 10 character moments is that you don't have to like my list, but at the end of the day, it is my list. So if you disagree with me or you disagree with DJ, you can go out there and you can make your own list or you can make your own podcast talking about the wrestlers that you like. That's just the way that it goes, people.
Yeah. Like, you know, you may disagree with me and that's all right. Like, you know, I would like to hear your opinion and we'll go from there.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I think that is going to wrap us up today, you guys, for the first episode of the R&D Wrestling Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for checking this out. Make sure you guys are leaving us a thumbs up, a good review, wherever you're checking out this podcast. We greatly appreciate it, you guys. We're going to try to do, like I said, the plan for now is to do one episode a month. We're going to kind of take this by ear so far because, you know, my main priority for me personally is still my YouTube channel and Sector for Nerds, but we're going to see where this podcast takes us and where it goes. And we're always willing to adapt and adjust as we go and to try and figure things out. And we hope that you guys enjoy listening. We hope that you guys will share us around with your other wrestling friends or other people that you know that might like wrestling to help spread the word about this podcast. We would greatly appreciate it.
Spread the word.
Yeah.
We're about to do something great here, guys. Like, we are about to do something amazing here, and we would appreciate any kind of support you can give us. Please and thank you.
And to give you guys a little bit of a tease as well for episode 2, we are going to be breaking down the prequel to AEW, and that is All In from 2019. The first ever All In that they did, the indie show that Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks put on that pretty much helped start AEW. So we're going to be going over our thoughts on that and how it led to the origins of AEW. And we're also going to be going over how this week we went over our top 10 favorite male wrestlers. Next time we are going to go over our top 10 favorite female wrestlers. So we hope you guys are excited. Thank you guys for checking out this podcast and we'll hopefully see you in the next one.